Okay, welcome back. Another beautiful Hakel Halacha Shir. Now that we've completed, Pesach is over. So we're not going to be doing any more of the Halachas of Pesach, but being that the summer is upon us, or it's coming soon, and people are making summer plans and travel plans and camp plans and who knows what kind of plans, and there's all kinds of risk involved in travel and dangerous stunts like bungee jumping off the Grand Canyon, figured it would be a good idea if we highlighted the laws in the general section of health, the laws of what you're not allowed to do according to halacha, certain behaviors, certain actions you're not allowed to do because of the danger and the risk involved. Obviously, everything in life is risky. Crossing the street is risky. Getting in a car is risky. Frying an egg is risky. There's risk involved in all human endeavor. Some of that risk is tolerable and acceptable according to halacha because it's pretty difficult to live without it. Some of that risk is intolerable and unacceptable according to halacha because it's not considered vital for life and you can live just fine without taking that risk, and then you would fall back on the principle that you cannot put your life in danger because you don't have ownership over your life. So, without further ado, chapter 33, Devarim ha'asurim mishum sakana, things that are forbidden because of their danger or riskiness. Aleph, also lechel dog and basar. You're not allowed to eat fish together with meat simultaneously, like a fish burger. A piece of salmon together with a beef burger. And even if all you're doing is eating fish together with chicken fat, is also not allowed because this is dangerous, this is bad for your health. You cannot roast meat and fish in an oven at the same time. When the oven is small. In other words, I guess not a commercial oven, or a pizza oven maybe. The only way you can do that in a smaller oven is if one of them is covered. So if you have a sealed tray, you know, wrapped with foil or such, and that has the fish inside, and then there's an open tray that has the meat inside, that would be okay. However, in our ovens, which are large, you don't have to worry about it. And this was written a couple hundred years ago, so I'm not sure exactly what size oven he's referring to, if it's a commercial oven or a home oven. But practice today is that if you do this, you do it when one of the foods are covered. Base. When you're eating in a meal, fish followed by meat, not simultaneously, or vice versa, first meat, then fish. You should eat some bread and drink some water in between the fish and the meat dishes. Because that's considered to be wiping and rinsing your mouth, and so that even in your mouth you won't have any intermingling of fish and meat. You have to be very careful not to consume human sweat. All human sweat is poisonous, except for the sweat of the face. Now, you ask, how could a person ever consume sweat? Who exactly is, you know, squeezing out their sweaty undershirt into a cup? You know, the thought itself is nauseating. So he tells you an example right here. You might put some food. You don't have pockets. You're going on a hike. Where are you going to stick your sandwich? You put it in your shirt. So don't put any food in between your clothing and your body, because then the food will absorb the sweat, and then you'll eat it, and that's a problem. Do not put money into your mouth. You heard this one from when you were a child. Because the money might have some sweat on it from people's hands. And also, everybody touches money. Everybody's hands has been who knows where. Some of those people who have touched the money are not well. And there's germs. And you don't want that to get into you. So don't put money in your mouth. Dalit. When a person is inhaling the scent of some kind of food, should make sure to spit out whatever saliva is in his mouth and not to swallow the saliva. If you swallow that saliva that you have in your mouth as you're inhaling the scent of food, that could lead you to some kind of danger. It doesn't articulate what the danger is, God forbid. But that's what he says here. This goes back to the times of the Talmud. Drinks that were left uncovered overnight should not be drunk. So if you have some unfinished drinks, cover them with either, you know, if it's a bottle, cover the bottle. If it's a cup, you know, put something over the cup. This was out of a concern that a snake or another poisonous animal might come, take a drink from the water, or whatever the drink is, leave behind some venom, and then you're in trouble.
Does that also count if the drink is in the fridge?
The drink is?
In the fridge.
No. That's stored away. Don't matter, open, on the table, out in the open. You're not allowed to keep food or drink under your bed, even if they're covered. Because the impure spirit that comes to a person's body when they sleep would affect that food. Remember in camp there were times where kids accidentally left their prized cereals under their beds and they threw them out. In the villages where the unlearned are, there are some people who keep potatoes and other foods under their beds as storage, and they should be warned and cautioned not to do this. So far, nothing on the bungee jumping. Stay tuned. In general, be careful when it comes to things that are dangerous, because as a general rule in halacha, we take physical danger more seriously than religious prohibition. So you could say the prohibition of eating milk and meat is a religious prohibition. Prohibition of eating fish and meat is a danger prohibition, a physical danger. That's going to have more weight in halacha than the religious prohibition of milk and meat. You should be more concerned about the potential or possibility of danger, of physical danger, than the potential or possibility of a religious prohibition, religious violation. Yeah?
Is there any extra explanation about why fish and meat together is dangerous?
Doesn't say it here. I remember way, way back, something about the combination just digestively is not healthy, but I don't remember, I don't know, you know, I'm not sharp exactly on the details. I just thinking out loud, I mean, how many dishes are there out there in the world that are like a fish and meat combo? It's not really common. You know? Huh?
Some like ethnic dishes.
I am sure there's somebody somewhere who eats them, but in our culture, at least in our part of the world, I can't say I've heard of too many dishes that are, you know, a nice piece of fillet of sole with steak together. Nobody does that. I don't know. You know, I'll have the schnitzel with a scoop of tuna on top. Nobody does that. You know, dip your pastrami in tuna. No, right? It's not that hard. But yeah, I think it's a digestive issue. Therefore, because of these principles, you're not allowed to go in any dangerous place. You cannot walk under a leaning wall, a wall that's not stable and straight, or on a shaky bridge. You're not allowed to walk alone at night. You should not sleep alone at night. You're also forbidden to drink water from a river at night. Or to place your mouth on a stream of water. I guess maybe like you have a stream of water coming off a mountain or something. Because in those two cases, you don't see what you're drinking. Either drinking, you're scooping up water from a river at night, or you're putting your mouth directly on the stream so you don't see it before it comes into your mouth. And you have no idea what's going into your mouth. It's too risky. There's all kinds of things that could be there. So don't drink that way. And so on and so forth. Just giving you a few examples here. But any activity that has a danger to life and a risk to it, and I think the important qualifier is and it's not an activity that is essential or critical to living life, not allowed to do. Skydiving. With the rare exceptions of people that must skydive, because otherwise they just can't go on. I don't know that you can find any sanction in halacha allowing you to skydive, from a halachic point of view. A huge risk to life. It's very safe, fine. You're jumping out of an airplane.
People almost never die from it, then it's okay.
If people almost never die?
Yeah.
I mean, it probably does boil down to stats, right?
Right. I have to assume that the stats of people that die in skydiving accidents as opposed to car crashes,
yeah,
I would assume it's much lower for skydiving.
So if that's the case, I don't have stats at my fingertips. I just pulled it out of the hat as an example of something that's not critical to life. But if the stats are that good, then maybe it's not a problem, right? I'm just giving you a random example. But use your creativity and understand that the principle of putting your life in danger when it's not necessary or it's not critical or essential to living life, we can't keep you locked up in your house forever because you're afraid of the risks out there in the world, right? Life has risk. Halacha understands life has risk. Everything is risky to some degree. But it's very different. Crossing the street is not the same as standing on the railroad tracks and, you know, hopping up and down waiting to see if you can jump out of the way of the train just in time. It's unnecessary risk.
So I guess this makes me think of, there's something like driving, which everyone kind of has to do, and there's something like skydiving, which is the big scary, but I feel like there's so much in the middle. Like, where does this...
Everyone should go skydiving, though. They're not so far apart.
But you know where else this came up? COVID.
Well, I mean,
what is actually a risky behavior? Where are you actually putting your life in danger? And where are you not? And some of the calculus that society was making of what's risky and what isn't and what's okay and what's not was so out of whack. It was so incoherent. It's risky to do it in this case, but not in that case. In this case, it's safe to do it, but in that case, it's not. Same basic idea, but, right? If it's a drugstore, it's okay. And I understand you want to minimize people going out, whatever, but that's not how it was presented. And so on and so forth. There really is a lot of gray.
Right, like it's this true. Gets me thinking about the middle of, like, hiking can be considered dangerous. There's a poster just a couple feet away from us about a son and study trip, a women's Jewish trip to Zion National Park, and I looked at it online. You do all these beautiful hikes and what? Like that doesn't scream safe to me.
A hike,
yeah, right? A hike when like I'm thinking about what Zion looks like and like all these hikes.
There are riskier hikes than others, sure.
Yeah, but is there really a way to halakhically calculate what's a risky hike and what's not?
That's a very good question.
I'm not getting a lot of detail here.
It's a very good question. It's a very good question. There's definitely a lot of gray. And just to mess it up even more, what's considered risky for somebody who's 22 what's considered risky for somebody who's 62 is not the same level of risk for someone who's 22. Right? There are a lot of variables that go into it. It isn't black and white. This is always forbidden. This is not. But let's start off with the general principle. You cannot put your life in danger. It's more severe than religious prohibition. To some degree, life is inherently risky. Now you have to figure out how to navigate between those two poles. You have to live life, and you cannot take unnecessary risk. I once gave a class about this a long, long time ago. I don't remember much of it. But this principle is definitely operative in halacha, and how we navigate the gray is how essential is it to life? How, you know, again, versus how strong is the risk? Right? You're getting in a car, sure, there's risk there, right? It's also almost impossible in most cities, North America at least, to live life without a car. Either your own or somebody else's car, fine. But I think you get the idea. Ches. Noyegin shemshas at kufa manichin ksas baraz al kol amashkim hamacholim al mufusholim ekvushim luchim intzrichin. I'm not sure what this is referring to. What is b'shas hatkufa? During the time of what? Did you say over there? During the time...
Equinox?
The equinox. Huh. Interesting. So during the equinox, there's a custom to put some iron over, like an iron cover, over drinks and foods. I guess raw foods. Things that are cooked or pickled or salted don't need. I'm not sure what that is. Again, this is Kitzer, so this is just a very abridged outcome of a larger discussion elsewhere in Halacha or in the Gemara. And I confess I did not do this. I did not prep this ahead of time. So I don't know what is all behind this. I'm just going to keep going. Tess. Halacha 9. Asur lechol machol mamashkim shenapshe shal adam katzim. You're not allowed to eat food that are nauseating to people. You're not allowed to eat out of dirty, nauseating utensils. Shenapshe shal adam katzim. That a person's spirit, a person's soul, is nauseated by them. Chayin lo yechol b'dayim mezoyim. You should not eat with filthy hands. Called Elohim b'chlal tshakshu nafshei seichem. These are all fall under the Torah's prohibition of do not disgust. Do not make your souls disgusting. Don't do disgusting things.
It's so applicable to university apartments.
Don't be a slob. The biblical commandment, don't be a slob.
Okay. I really love that the sixth line, like that counter, like before you've even said anything, they're like, even if a person says that he has no aversion to things, his opinion is ignored. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to the gross
yeah.
slob.
Yeah, I feel gross, you shouldn't listen to him.
His opinion is wrong.
Yeah, you are irrelevant because you're clearly not normal, and a normal human being should not be eating out of filthy utensils with filthy hands, and it's just repulsive and disgusting, and get a life.
That was what I took from this.
There you go. Yud. Behema oyov shayim sekonim v'nishkatu. If you had an animal or a bird which were in mortal danger, not well, and they were slaughtered, even though they have become permissible to eat by virtue of being slaughtered in a proper way, those who are scrupulous in their observance are stringent and they do not eat such animals. They want to eat only healthy animals.
Shouldn't that also just be helpless?
Eh?
Shouldn't that also be helpless? Just package in with the other, not someone who's meticulous in their observance of kashrus, but just people who are...
No, not necessarily scrupulous in observance of kashrus. It's scrupulous in your observance of not putting your life in danger, of the physical side of things. Yeah. No, I don't think this is it's not a law in the category of kosher laws. This is a law in the category of guarding your health.
Not putting
your life at risk.
They've got a much like weaker assertion over here than they did for the fish and meat. That's fine, interesting. You think
what was
it
say here?
For fish and meat. It's forbidden to eat fish together with meat, even with poultry fat, because it is hazardous. It's just a full-on, you cannot do this. But in terms of the sick animal, it says you can do it, but if you're being super careful, then maybe you don't. And interesting that that's the order of how scripture reads.
Mm-hmm.
Something that maybe, well, whatever they were thinking, bad for your digestion, you know, whatever's mm-hmm. going on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, eating from a sick animal.
Well, the truth is, he doesn't say, I translated as sick. He doesn't say sick. He says animals that were in danger. I guess, I mean, I understood. That's how they translated it here also. I understood that it means sick. He doesn't say chaylim. He says, Mr. Khan, I guess it probably means sick. What else could it mean?
I mean, it has to mean sick. Like sick to me seems like disease or illness, but like an animal that's like hit by a car, like a broken
leg
sort of thing.
Maybe.
Like a horse that needs to be
Maybe it's not a disease.
Right. It's a sickness.
Because that's a different terminology. I don't know how much we can hair split on the lingo here.
But it doesn't say. Definitely sick, but doesn't have a disease.
Right, exactly. And that's where you would say, if you're really scrupulous, you would stay away even from that. Whereas if the animal had, like, if the animal was diseased, nobody should be eating that.
Yeah.
Whether you're scrupulous or not, that's just a bad idea. So maybe that's what it means. I'll
just
go with
microwave
that.
Microwave it for 2 minutes.
First and then slaughter it?
2 minutes in the microwave, everything comes out safe.
Okay, Yud Aleph, 11. Also, Luke says, Ilan, we have a couple more to go, we'll finish the chapter. Also, Luke says, Ilan Michael, Isaperis, Osakana. You're not allowed to cut down a fruit bearing tree, and doing so is dangerous. If this tree is near other fruit bearing trees that are more prominent or productive than it, and this tree is weakening those trees, and so too, if you need that place where the tree is for some constructive purpose, and also if it is worth more as lumber than it is as food, in those three cases you are allowed to chop down a fruit-bearing tree. Otherwise, there is a rule that you cannot just wantonly chop down a fruit-bearing tree in the same way you might be allowed to chop down a non-fruit-bearing tree. Yud Beis. Ha'choshesh b'meyav yash'esen l'fuosh ma'amidin al-bitne kli sh'esh b'mayim chamim. He says, there are those who treat stomach aches by placing pots full of hot water on top of a person's belly. And you say, you should not do this. This is dangerous. Yud Gimel. Asur laver b'nachal sh'meyim avreitfin. You're not allowed to cross a river where the water is rushing. I don't know if it's a white water rapids or just a rushing current. You should not cross a river where there's a rushing current. If the water is above your waist, yes? Loins.
Hips.
Okay. Because it's dangerous. At that level, that depth of water, a rushing current that comes to your hips, you could be swept away. So don't do that. Time for a boat. Or a bridge. Not a shaky bridge. Yudalit. You're not allowed to verbalize any kind of dangerous occurrence happening or to wish for something dangerous to happen to any Jew. You're even not allowed to say that if so-and-so were alive, he would have come here. In other words, to say about a missing person who we don't know yet whether he's alive or dead. For you to verbalize something in a way that implies that he's already dead is not allowed. There's a covenant established with the mouth that there's power in the way a person speaks. And that what we say brings realities to come to be. And therefore you have to watch what you say and speak carefully. Do not speak in a careless manner, implying or insinuating or for sure expressly saying that something bad has or should happen to somebody else. You should not scare a child with something impure by saying, for example, that a cat or a dog is going to come and take him away. In other words, sometimes you want to scare a kid. If you don't get into bed right now, what? The dog is going to come get you. Ooh, very scary, they'll get into bed. But you should not scare a child in such a way. In all similar cases, you have to be very, very careful in how you train yourself, your habits of speech, because there is power to what you say, and speak wisely. That is the end of chapter 33. We wish you all a very, very happy and safe summer, and that in all your travels, you should not put yourself in any kind of danger, and adhere to all the guidelines of halacha, and make sure that you are a well-behaved Jew wherever you go. Okay.